You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
And Norm's back.
Hey.
Hi.
I'm here.
We pulled him out of the upside down for this episode.
And I didn't even know I was
so,
there.
So, does that mean Norm is now right side up?
Yeah, sometimes. So, what are we smoking this week?
So, this week we have got the Hamlet 25th year. This is a fine cigar from Rocky Patel that is going to support a Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, a Pennsylvania broadleaf binder, and Nicaraguan and Honduran fillers.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, this is celebrating Hamlet Parada's 25th year in the cigar industry. You know, he's a famous roller and blender back from the Cuban, formerly of Cuban cigar fame, now here producing cigars in America. But since we're going to be talking about things from the 80s, yeah, 25 years ago, 25 years of cigar making, it's, yeah.
So it's pretty
kinda,
close.
Kind of goes on topic.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, for me, I'm going to say that this is leaning more toward a medium body. But, I mean, with the Habano, there's a touch of spice. So, medium body, but almost, a medium full almost flavor to it. But, just really good. I mean, it's hard to knock this craft. I mean, this is a wonderfully blended cigar. The construction is superb. Don't have anything negative to say.
I mean, a man that's known for his rolling can't have a cigar that's not rolled well. I mean, it's gonna
compared to Ham, that's first release cigar. This is a whole order milder and everything. I mean, I would even go so far as to call this more of a mild medium than really a medium.
But again, that's
body
like
cigar.
Kind of a lot of like the OG Cuban cigars are kind of more. Medium mild, mild
yeah, that's
medium
kinda,
cigars.
You know, the interesting thing is you hear people talk about Cuban cigars like they're the most, knock your ass off, cigar in the world. And it's just like, really?
Really not.
Not so much at all. I mean.
That's from people that, don't smoke cigars.
Exactly.
And they're like, ooh, there's a Cuban. I've got to try that. And they're like, oh, my God, this is super strong. It's like, no, you just haven't smoked anything else. But speaking of, 25 years going back to the 80s, we're here to talk about season 2 of Stranger Things. We did a season 1 episode, and like I said,
a season 2?
There was a season 2?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Out, yeah, a couple weeks ago.
When did that happen?
Like, Friday the 13th.
Did I miss that?
Well, apparently, I don't know, most of, a good, 75%
I may still be in the upside
of the
down.
Netflix users watched it all in 24 hours, of course. So... Yeah,
and that's
the
surprising
only
why?
Yeah, with Netflix users. Isn't that the
I mean,
point
that's
of having Netflix, really? To
I mean,
watch entire seasons in one sitting?
You know, I think it is absolutely trained me. Going to go on a little bit of a tangent here. But, I mean, there are a number of TV series that I will wait to hit Netflix. And then that way I can just watch it in one go without commercial interruption.
No. Yeah, I used to do that, and then I got engaged, and if she likes it, I'm not allowed to watch it without her, and she can't marathon an entire season
that's
in a day like I used to.
That's why you watch it twice.
No, I mean, even now, for example, something like Game of Thrones, some epic show, I didn't start watching until it was already five seasons in, but being able to watch that much of it all in one sitting is incredible to consume that way, and it's totally... different than how we're so used to consuming media on the weekly episode basis.
So let's tell the fine listeners, as we're talking about binge-watching endless hours of television, what's one product that you can think of that can, help keep you alert and awake?
Yeah, if you're going to stay up for 24 hours watching whatever Netflix series is, call in the Strike Force. StrikeForceEnergy.com. use promo code for Cigar Nerds for 20% off your order. And also, if you're going to go to the Upside Down and fight off, you know, Demogorgons or weird, you know, government scientists.
Pollywags!
You know, good to have some Strike Force with you just in case. Put it on your Eggos or your beer or whatever you're drinking. It'll get you the energy you need to make it through the day.
Whoa, Strike Force infused maple syrup.
Ooh.
I mean, Lidsingers did make a maple syrup. You put some Strike Force in that Lidsingers.
We might just be living dangerously. We may end up on the Upside Down from, you know, like
this is how you get diabetes. Sugar.
Yeah, stop.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Mini Bobby Brown, Stranger Things, Season 1 recap. Make some noise!
Let's go back to Indiana, circa 1983. Just for boys in the basement, chilling, playing D&D. There was Lucas, there was Willie, Will, and Dustin, there was a Mike. But one night, Will goes missing while he's riding on his bike. Yikes! That's when they met me alive. I had no hair on my head. I had been so close to dead. Courtesy of Dr. Branagh, who's hunting me 24/7. Joyce was hanging Christmas lights in the web. Started hearing something Willie had said. Could be a message from the beyond. What happened above? She's just gone in the Upside Down. Hoppers on top of the case. Well, I'm throwing fans into space. I'm lying down in a tank, trying my best to find Willie. And Dustin's got pudding for days. Demogorgon's getting all in my way. Blasting to pieces just like a grenade. Will's now at home cupping slugs in the sink. What happened to me? I'm in the Upside Down.
And welcome back to the podcast. Cue like 80s synth music here.
This we'll fix it in post.
Wait, that requires somebody to actually do something in post.
Get on it,
bro. We're gonna need to find a guy.
Yeah, so we're gonna be talking about season 2 of the surprise hit Netflix series Stranger Things.
Season 2?
Written by the Duffer Brothers. Yes, there is a season 2, Norm. You need to like catch up. Did the rap song not teach you anything?
Caught me up on season 1.
That was season 1.
Has she done a rap song about season 2 so I can just not catch yet. Up really fast?
We gotta wait till season 3 comes out, then she'll probably rap about season 2.
Yeah, which season 3 is confirmed, by the way.
Oh yeah, I think they're already like working on it. Yeah, it's Stranger Things, I mean, yeah, we did an episode about season 1 because it was one of those things that like, there was no advertising for it. It just appeared on Netflix one day, and it was probably out for a month before I sat down to watch it. But then it was one of those things like everybody was talking about it on Facebook or wherever, and I was like, "All right, I got to see this shit." And I'm like, "Oh my god, this is the greatest thing."
You know, we talk so much. I mean, whether it's Nintendo trying to bring back retro consoles and everything else. I mean. There's such a nostalgia factor, especially for us that grew up in the 80s. And it's like, hey, that's actually, what my childhood consisted of. Like,
yeah, and season 1 had so many, like, almost shot-for-shot references to, I mean, Goonies, Jaws, freaking E.T., all these, and also the, amazing 80s soundtrack. But while season 1 was almost like a homage to 80s adventure movies, season 2 feels much darker. It's almost an homage to like 80s horror movies. I mean, there's definitely some, Nightmare on Elm Street and, The Exorcist and like these, blatantly Ghostbuster references throughout.
Did that ever happen to you as a kid, by the way? You just show up at school and be the only kid in costume?
Yes, but what's the point?
Yeah, because that was like a scene for that, too, when they discovered that they had spent all this time making these Ghostbusters costumes. And you see Dust in it was one of the scenes you use in the trailer where you see kind of Dustin looking off into the distance, horrified, and you think, like, oh my god, he's seeing some kind of monster, but no, he's realizing, like, they're the only ones who have gone to school in costume.
But, like, I mean, they were such, for homemade costumes, they were so badass. Like,
Yeah, I mean, I would wear that shit to DragonCon. Those were like
Can't buy replicas of that quality. Like,
nope.
Especially his ghost trap. His ghost trap was like on point. I was like, damn, I wish I had shit like that when I was a kid. Because you know, the Mattel version of that did not look as cool as the homemade shit these kids made in the '80s.
Yeah, I mean and that was to your point. You know, kind of the cool thing about season two is yes, there were quite a few hints, obviously to D&D, but then Pac-Man and, so many other video games. I mean, I was almost like, if Ready Player One is anything like these shows, have alluded to and, like, the amazing nostalgia factor, like, it's just going to be insane.
Like, it's almost like cause season one was very heavy on the D&D influences, and there's some of that in season two with, like, the references to the new monster, the Mind Flayer, and more the smaller versions of the Demogorgon or whatever. But this one, instead of starting off with them playing D&D, it starts off with them playing video games. I think this one definitely had more of a video game reference than it did like D&D references.
Well, I think Nintendo came out, 84, I think? Somewhere in that. Something it was like either that. 84 or 85.
Because this one also jumps a year.
Just a natural progression in their own lives. Yeah,
the last one was set in 83, and it's been almost a year, because like the first one was set kind of Christmas time, this one's set Halloween time. So nearly a year from the events of Stranger Thing 1, we caught up with our heroes, Mike, Will, Dustin, and Lucas, and eventually 11. But right now they don't know she's still alive, because last we saw her was getting kicked off to the Upside Down. But it's like this one, like, and there's like scenes too. I'm like, these are almost like video games reference, because and of course, spoiler warning from here on in. If you've not seen season two yet, come back after you've watched it. But when he's trying to trap the Demogorgon dogs, he's using like a trail of baloney, and it kind of looks like Pac-Man coming through, like eating all and there's even like the main epic battle when they're trying to close the gate, and Eleven's doing her psychic mojo, and Hopper's trying to with the rifle and the shotgun trying to keep the monsters off her back. I'm like, I hate this level. I've played the freaking escort level in every video game, and it sucks. I'm like, this is exactly what this is. Hopper's playing an escort mission. He's got to defend her until she finishes her quest.
Which I got to say,
true life.
Yeah. Hopper really stepped up to be a badass in this film. I mean, not only, from, the whole action aspect, but just, trying to take on, the whole father figure role and everything of that nature. I mean, I love the meme, that kind of compares Hopper to Rick Grimes, and it's like,
Yeah, it's like, who wore it better? But yeah, it's, kind of like season one, it seems like that, the main characters all branched off and had their own storyline only to come together in the last, two episodes maybe. Which is kind of similar, like when we talked about season one, there was the kid's story, there was Hopper and Joyce's story, and then there was Nancy and Jonathan's story, and then they all eventually come back together. But in this one, you've got, the kids all almost, where season one was a lot about Mike and Eleven, this one was more about Dustin and Lucas's kind of coming-of-age story, where Mike, for most of it, is just hanging out, watching over Will, who's going through some shit. So you got, their story, you've got Joyce and Will's story, and then you have Hopper and Eleven's story, and then, of course, Nancy and Jonathan's off seeking hashtag justice for Barb.
Hashtag yeah. Justice for Barb, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man, we trend, all right?
Are we starting a thing now?
That's how we roll. But I got to say, season two, I think, was so, awesome, because the scale of season one, was okay, everything's limited to just this tiny town and to, this group of individuals. Whereas season two really, took on and, really just open the floodgates, I guess, is, you know.
Yeah, you can definitely tell they had more time, more money with season two, because in season one, it was very, we spent most of the time either at Will's house, Mike's house, the school, but you never really saw much outside of that. I mean, like, as far as, like, families and stuff, you only saw, you know, Mike and Nancy's parents, and, you know, now you've seen, in this season, you get to see Dustin's house, you get to see Dustin's family, you get to see Lucas's house and Lucas's family, and, you know, you even get to go to Barb's house and see her family, and you know, and they're all traveling. I mean, hell, they even go to, was it Chicago at one point? So it's like, there's like,
yeah, and well, more on that one.
Chicago, that's like, you know, actually downtown Atlanta from the looks of it.
Yeah, we'll go into that one a little bit, because I don't know. I still don't quite know how I feel about that episode. Like, for me, that episode kind of shifted momentum and, you know, took me away from the series a little bit. I mean, it was, in one aspect, sort of cool, but then, you know, the other aspect was it didn't have the same feel or anything and, you know, kind of threw a kink in the mix.
But then again, it was, you know, let's dive down that path of because, like I said, Eleven's story in this one is very much separate from the kids. Like, she doesn't reconnect with the group until the end of, like, the eighth episode, and then, like, the last episode.
352 days later.
Yeah.
But who's counting?
So, yeah, you know, at the end of season one, we see Hopper leaving food in the woods, and we don't know where Eleven's at. Well, turns out she returned right after, like, when she killed the monster, she ended up falling into the Upside Down, but found a crack and was able to open it and come back. But when she goes back to find Mike, she sees, like, you know, the FBI and stuff at his house and realizes that, you know, I'm putting all my friends in danger, so I'm just going to go, you know, be crazy hobbit in the woods, where she's eventually found by Hopper, who kind of has spent a year, like, you know, treating her kind of as his daughter nearly, you know, hidden out in this cabin out in the woods, you know, very, you know, Evil Dead looking cabin. And it's kind of been her protector to keep her safe. Cause as we know, you know, at the end of season one, you see Hopper being kind of driven off to the lab or whatever. And turns out now that he's kind of supposedly a new friendlier group of people are running the lab. And they're just really trying to clean up the mess the previous guys had done. But, you know, at the same time, kind of Hopper's, like, in on it now. So he's like, y'all keep your weird science shit out of my town, and I'll try to keep the locals calm as much as possible.
Yeah, and that was kind of the thing, too, that was, you know, great misdirection. Because I'm thinking the entire time that, you know, that whole lab is the big bad.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm thinking, you know, it's some Umbrella Corp, you know, type shit. And
yeah, and they introduce, you know, a new character played by Paul Reiser, Dr. Owens, who from the jump, I was like, I don't trust this guy. He's got to be one of those guys that are super nice to your face, but is really doing some evil shit behind doors.
Well, you know what I thought, you know, when I saw that? You know, I had flashbacks to Halloween, and, you know, Michael Myers, you know, kind of psychologist, right? You know, where he's there to, you know, so I'm like, maybe he's not necessarily evil per se, but I don't think he's, you know, a good guy either.
Yeah, because, like, he's so creepily nice when you first meet him. And then he's like, you know, Will is kind of having these flashes of the Upside Down, and they pretty much all think it's just PTSD. So they're trying to treat Will, and, you know, but really he's like, you know, and he turns out to be pretty much a good guy, just kind of stuck in a bad situation. He's like, you know, I didn't cause all this. And he repeatedly says, like, those people are dead. Like, I'm not the enemy anymore. I'm just trying to clean up their mess and keep this shit from spilling over into the rest of the world. But, you know, he definitely, like, from the first introduction, it's like he's getting that creepy vibe because he's, like, almost too nice. It turns out, no, he's just actually trying to help him. And Hopper's trying to help them kind of earn enough good grace so he can, you know, bring Eleven back without her getting turned into a lab rat, you know. Cause, so he's kind of, like, you know, playing the you know, playing, you know, trying to get in on the inside.
I mean,
so he can help her out.
He's kind of playing good cop, bad cop. Like, and that actually made me kind of question Hopper's character a little bit too on, you know, what is his real intention? You know, is, you know, all right, I'm going to kind of protect you, but eventually I'm going to flip you over to the feds or something. Like, you know, I was almost, you know, waiting on, you know, him to kind of take on a, you know, antagonist sort of role.
Go full Lando.
Yeah.
Where he turns 11 over to save the kids or something like that, which pretty much what he ended up doing a little bit last season. And that could be another reason for his motivation to help her, because he kind of ratted them out and almost got them killed.
Well, you know, and I'm kind of thinking too, you know, where, you know, he lost, you know, kids and stuff like that. So, you know, maybe it's a way for, you know, him to, you know, kind of have some redeeming parental, you know, qualities and, you know, kind of make amends for, you know, some of that tragedy that took place.
Yeah, because, you know, back to the 11 story, you know, the season started off with this car chase out of nowhere of people who was like, you don't know if they're robbing somebody or something. You see them just kind of coming out of this house and getting chased. And all of a sudden, like, they go through this tunnel, and the tunnel collapses, and all the cops, like, crash, but there's nothing there. And then you see, you know, this, you know, Indian girl with, like, you know, nosebleed, and it's, you see the tattoo on her wrist, and it's 8. So, like, because, we season one, where we've seen the 11 tattoo, we're like, what happened to 1 through 10? And
well,
now we know that
there are
others.
I guess now you know there is a 1 through 10.
Well, I don't know. You know, in my head, I'm thinking 7, 8, 9. You know, I'm not quite sure where 10 is. But, I mean, there's a few of them right there.
But, yeah, with this one, like I said, you know, 11 is spending most of her time kind of hooked up in this cabin. And she's using her, like, mind-walking thing to watch the boys and kind of keep up with what's going on in life. But, you know, she eventually gets, you know, she's been there for nearly a year, and Hopper keeps telling her, like, you can go back to, you know, life soon. And she's like, when soon? You said it 30 days. You said 100 days. Like, when is soon? And has this whole, like, psychic tantrum and, like, you know, blows out the windows and throws stuff at Hopper like you, you know, expect.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you know, from a parenting aspect, it's like, man, you know her powers and abilities, and it's like, you know, you're trying to be a father figure, but, you know, at the same time, like, you know, if she wants to decimate you, like, you're just toast.
I do like, you know, as she's cleaning up the cabin and, like, you know, they're kind of flashing back to some of their early days together, and he's like, there's 3 rules. I call them the don't be stupid rule. Like, don't go outside. You know, don't open the windows and don't leave or something like that. And she's like, yeah, I'm doing all 3 of those. Fuck you, I'm out. And, you know, while she's cleaning the cabin, she finds, like, these, you know, Hopper's been storing all these, you know, police files and stuff in the basement. And she finds, like, the research that they had done on season 1 on Hawking's lab, and finds the file on, you know, what's potentially her mother that they came across in season 1 when they were looking for Will. So she goes on a quest to find her mom, and turns out her mom also has the psychic powers and, you know, is able to give her a vision and show what all happened to her and how she ended up, you know, drilling on herself and talking to herself. And is basically, you know, when she had 11, they snatched her immediately because they're like, oh, this kid's probably going to have powers, and then faked her death and told her, oh, she died in childbirth. But she, of course, mom don't believe that, so she gets a gun and busts into Hawking's lab to try to find her, and does find her and a couple other kids, but then she gets captured and they fry her brain with some electroshock therapy, and that's why she's kind of a drooling on herself mess. But it was kind of cool that, like, she, you know, got that backstory and found out that, you know, she's not just a number. She has a name. She's, you know, Jane.
Very George Orwellian. Like, I love that dynamic of, you know, the season. You know, just getting some of those glimpses.
But, you know, with that, she's like, I saw this other girl in my vision. I think that's what Mama was trying to tell me. So she hunts down this other, you know, who turns out to be number 8, and tracks her to Chicago and goes. And then it's very, almost like a Empire Strikes Back, like Star Wars Yoda training moment. Because pretty much up till this point, 11 has been kind of doing everything out of, like, instinct or whatever. And she runs into this older girl who has been free from the lab a lot longer than she has, and knows a lot more. Her powers are different. They're more of a, you know, Jedi mind trick of powers.
Yeah. So a Yoda moment.
Yeah. So she's, you know, starts training her to use her powers, and, like, you know, this anger inside of you got to use it, you know, to fuel your power and become more precise with it and stuff, and like, you know, and they had that whole like,
and then
lift
the
train.
Dark side, we have cookies.
Yeah, but they had that whole like, you know, pull the train to us. It's too big. You know, size matters not. Just don't think of how heavy it is. Bring it here. And I'm just like, you know, the whole like, you know, do whatever, do or do not. There is no try. Just
yes.
Oh. But yeah, then it turns out she's been out there hunting these people from the lab that has escaped. That like, there's like the creepy doctor that Eleven saw in her a vision that, you know, as the one who actually applied the electroshock to the mother. So they've been going around, and any of these people that had, you know, quit Hawkins' lab before, you know, the whole Demogorgon thing happened, and, you know, killing these people. So she's like, you know, like this roaming Jedi assassin. And tries to, you know, make Eleven kind of come to the dark side and join her in her vengeance quest.
With a sweet punk outfit. Like, that was so, you know, 80s punk rock. Like,
I mean, you even had the guy with the giant mohawk in the group. I mean, but yeah, but she, you know, has that tempted moment where it's like, and I'm like thinking to myself the whole time, the Emperor, like, you know, yeah, you feel the hate flowing through you. Strike him down and take your position at my side. But then she's like, no, this is not who I am. But, you know, thanks for teaching me some neat tricks. I'm going to go back and save. And she almost has that, you know, because she has the vision of Hopper about to get killed or whatever. And she's like, it's almost that, you know, Luke Skywalker on Dagobah moment. No, my friends are in trouble. I got to go.
So another homage played back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what's been so cool about Stranger Things is, you know, you can take all of these different scenarios and you're like, yeah, I've seen that, you know, and, you know, I mean, such huge franchises as Star Wars, you know, and, you know, other stuff out there. I mean, there's, you know, a lot alluding to Stephen King, John Carpenter, Steven Spielberg. I mean, a lot of awesome, you know, subtleties there.
All right, so we've talked about Barb, but what about everybody else? What have they been doing this whole time?
Well, like, you know, and then we have the boys who, you know, like I said, Mike is kind of emo at this point because, you know, he's missing Eleven, and really he was like the hero of last season, and now he kind of feels like I've got nothing to do. So he's just kind of grumpy and emo.
Hero to zero moment?
Yeah. And then we have the introduction of a couple new characters to the group, Mad Max and her brother Billy. Who, yeah, since there's no Eleven to hang out with the boys, they had her introduce another girl to the group. So you've got Maxine and Billy, who, you know, they have moved, played by Sadie Sink and Darce Montgomery. They're, you know, transfers from California, and you get that whole introduction with the Rock You Like a Hurricane soundtrack moment when they show up in their bitchin' 80s Camaro. And, you, and the skater chick from California, who is better at video games than the boys, so immediately they're like, we need to be her friend.
It's like, I didn't realize Dig Dug could be so competitive.
I didn't think that was a thing, yeah.
I mean, I can remember, you know, putting, you know, many hours into Dig Dug, but...
But yeah, but then you get the love triangle of Dustin and Lucas all competing to befriend the new girl. And it's kind of funny, like, season one had that opening Dungeons & Dragons moment where pretty much the entire plot of the season is laid out in that game of Dungeons & Dragons, where this one, it's kind of laid out in that them playing video games, because they're both playing... Was it Dragon Quest, Dragon Age, Dragon Quest? That
Dragon Quest, man.
Yes,
Dragon
which is Quest. Was fucking really? Impossible to play. And and even the Dustin loses and goes on this epic rant about this freaking overpriced piece of shit is designed to take your which was pretty much true. But and then Lucas jokes like, haha, you know, you'll get there eventually, but you're too slow. Like I've got Princess Daphne now, which is pretty much, you know, what happens. And, you know, Lucas eventually gets the girl.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you could almost look at this as, you know, it was a life-size, you know, game of Dragon Quest and Dig Dug.
What, the season?
Yeah.
The
yeah,
entire season is like that.
But yeah, then you have the her douchebag brother who's like, you know, just so over the top, like just a douchebag that it's like... He's their human. They didn't have the bully kids from the first season, so they needed a new bully who was just like, yeah, a dick to everybody. And yeah, poor Steve. but you have Dustin find the weird slug like, you know, or almost like tadpole like creature from, as we find, is from the upside down that they call the Poliwog. And you know, he's wants to raise this thing that keeps evolving, and unfortunately it, you know, while he thinks it's this weird undiscovered lizard thing, no, it's a creature from the upside down. It turns out it's like a baby, you know, Demogorgon, and eats his cat.
Poor Muse.
Justice for Muse this season.
Fuck you, man. Bob. Damn it.
My God.
Yeah. We need a lot of hashtags for this season.
But you had like the great
hashtag. We need more hashtags.
With Dustin's kind of quest through this, you have the great Dustin Steve friendship that develops. It's almost like a weird homage to buddy cop movies from the 80s. Because you know, Mike's off dealing with Will. Lucas is off trying to get the girl, and here's poor Dustin who, you know. Gatson Matarazzi, that dude is like going to be an amazing actor, because every time I see him, he has like the best lines in this season. He is like everybody's like, I'm like, that was me when I was a kid. Especially when he goes to the dance and no one will dance with him. I feel your pain, bro, because he has that like super overconfidence, but doesn't have the looks to pull it off. And that was me. I was super confident. I shouldn't have been. Occasionally, it worked in my favor. A lot of times it was a trial and error.
I mean, trial by fire, bro. I mean, you know.
You got to fail a lot before you hit the success. But, you know, he's dealing with this you know, demon dog and trying to get people on the radio. No one will listen to him. And he's like, out of desperation, goes to Mike's house to try to find him. And nobody's there. But Steve shows up, you know, because him and Nancy have broken up. And he comes to apologize. He's like, are those flowers for Mike's mom? No. He's like, well, no one else is here, so come with me. You still got that bat with the nails in it? Yeah, why? Get in the car, I'll explain on the way. And he's just like, all right, fuck it, whatever. We're going to go fight demons again.
Which I thought was, you know, a cool contrast, because, you know, it's like, you know, Steve at that point almost becomes a brother figure.
Like, yeah.
Like, you know, he went from being, you know, the, you know, bully to, you know, I don't know. Maybe not denial is the word, but...
And I also like the concept that he's been the one trying... Because Nancy's been, like, you know, wants to tell everybody the truth. She wants, you know, because the government has kind of covered all the stuff that happened season one up, including Barb's death. And she's the one, like, no, this needs to be out in the open when these people can't get away with it. And he's the one, like, nah, just go with the flow. Like, you know, leave it alone. But at the same time, he's still got his bat in the trunk just in case shit goes wild again. So he's like, you know, he's plays like, no, let's just leave it all alone. Like, don't fuck with the monsters, nothing. But he's like, just in case, I got my sweet bat with the nails in the trunk, just in case.
No barbed wire in this.
I was going to say, are we talking about Stranger Things or The Walking Dead?
No, no barbed wire. He's got a bat full of nails. But yeah, when he takes him back to his house to fight the thing, and they found it's dug out, and then they come up with a whole plan of, like, you know, leaving a trail of meat crumbs to lure it in. But he has that whole thing where he's like, you know, as they're walking, telling Steve about the girl and everything else, and he starts giving him like dating advice and stuff. And he's like, dude, you just gotta act like you don't care. And like, and he's like, but yeah, it's easy for you. You're, you know, good looking and all that. And he finally's like, all right, here's what you do. When your hair is damp, not wet, you need 4 squirts of the ferret faucet spray. He's like, what? Yes, and if you tell anybody I told you this, I will kill you. Just gives him, like, hair advice to clean up his look.
Which sucks for us guys that have no hair. What do we do?
I know, right?
Like, Miracle-Gro? I mean, as...
I mean...
Oh. But yeah, you get this whole, like, great, you know, Goonies moment nearly where, you know, once they all kind of come back together and they come up with a plan where, you know, Hopper and Eleven's gonna go take down the gate, and you know, as we'll talk about Will's journey here, you know, they Joyce and Jonathan and Nancy go off to try to exercise Will, you know, the boys, you know, well, they, of course, they, you know, Steve tries to fight the bully and gets his ass kicked, but they, you know, they, you know, kind of wrangle him and then go off on their own quest. They're like, well, we're going to set up a diversion to lure the monsters away from the gate so Eleven can do her thing. And he's almost like the, kind of like Brand was in Goonies. He's like the older brother that doesn't really want to be there, but he knows he has to go along to protect
I am
the
now
kids.
A victim of circumstance. Yeah. Turns out, I just happen to be a good babysitter.
Yeah, I love the poster I saw of, like, it was Adventures in Babysitting, but it was Steve.
Man, too bad they couldn't work his character into the babysitter, you know, to the other Netflix series.
Oh, that would have been interesting. but the whole, like, big bad this season too. You know, we had the Demogorgon, which was almost like Jaws, where it was just a mindless beast that was doing all these things. But then you find out, no, those are kind of like a subspecies of the Upside Down, and there's this giant shadow monster that they call the Mind Flayer. Yeah, you know, as because they, you know, they base all their description on the Dungeons and Dragons thing,
which
but it
really reminded me too of, you know, something from the movie completely just slipped my head. Damn it! Great thought. Damn it!
But
dead air. Wait a second.
War of the Worlds.
Yeah,
there we go.
It did look like the monster.
There we go.
But yeah, you know, Will keeps having these flashes of the Upside Down, and, you know, another new character and introduced this season, and also a big 80s icon himself, Mr. Sean Astin from Goonies, is Joyce's new boyfriend, Bob, you know, Radio Shack Bob, is just so game for whatever happens. He's
well,
like, all right,
I mean,
yeah, whatever.
And that was kind of the other thing is, you know, Bob's character was hard to pinpoint off the bat, because you're like, this guy is almost too perfect. Like,
but he gives, like, Will horrible advice, because everyone just assumes these visions he's having is some kind of, like, PTSD. So he tells him, he's like, yeah, I used to have nightmares of a creepy clown, and I just had to stand up to it and say, go away. And, yeah, you've got to stop running and stand up to it. So, of course, Will has another vision, and he tries to do that, because at this point he thinks it's just a dream as well. But no, it's real, and the shadow monster, you know, possesses him, and you get this whole great, you know, freaking exorcist type stuff going on from there on.
Oh,
out.
Lovely.
You know, really? I went a little bit
I kept
more,
waiting for saying there is no Will, only Zool.
I kept having some Evil Dead moments during that scene. You know, specifically with a tree.
Yeah.
But now we got a shadow monster.
But the thing is, it's like, you know, Will starts drawing these because he's linked to the monster now, because the monster is slowly taking over his body. But so at this point he can still kind of see what it's thinking without it controlling him yet, and starts drawing these like, you know, that they're not sure what it is. They figure it out that it's tunnels, because Hopper's been investigating all these like pumpkin patches and trees and stuff rotting, and he thinks there's some kind of leak from the lab. But it's actually like the shadow monster, you know, you see him in the Upside Down and he is like that, a shadow monster. But now he's kind of gotten a foothold in our world, and it's almost like he's building a physical form. Like, the tunnels are filled with, like, vines and stuff that, you know, it's basically, I think, building a body for himself under the ground. And also, the atmosphere in the tunnels are that weird with, like, the floating ash-looking stuff. You know, he's trying to convert, like, the atmosphere into something he can breathe, I guess. And Will is, like, his eyes and his mouth on our plane, and the Demogorgons are almost like the body's white blood cells. Like, they're hunting out, you know, any threats to the body as he's, like, you know, trying to build this thing so he can kind of cross over.
I mean, very much, you know, I mean, I don't know if a virus / parasite, you know, where you got to keep the host alive, you know, but I mean, you know, and they allude to, you know, the spy. And I love how, you know, it turns out that Will, you know, since he's infected, kind of becomes, you know, that spy, you know.
Yeah, because at first they use him against it, because Hopper goes, he figures out that, you know, these drawings may be a tunnel. I'm going to dig in and find, and gets in the tunnel and then gets trapped and almost killed. And they're able to find him. And I love, because, you know, Goonies reference, they're trying to figure this out. They don't know what these things are that he's drawn. And Bob, he's like, Bob, come in. You got to help us solve a puzzle, because he loves puzzles. But don't ask any questions. And he figures it out that it's actually a map.
Yeah.
And he's like, we need to find here. Because he could feel like where Hopper was, but he just didn't know, couldn't read the map. And he's like, so what's the X? Is it buried treasure? Like,
no questions.
But yeah, they, yeah. And like I said, he's tossed into all this super weird shit, but it's like, all right, I'm game. I'm here. Because like when Joyce goes to the tunnel to try to find Hopper, and they find him in this alien vine infested tunnel and save him, and he just looks like, hi Bob, hi Jim, just like, it's like just yeah, a normal day. I'm not gonna ask questions, you know, there's weird shit down here.
I mean, it was just so perfect.
Jeez. But then later he, you know, gets possessed fully nearly, and it's like, oh, I know where you have to go to kill the monster. So they send the SWAT team, Marines or whatever, into the tunnels, and they get there, and it's like, there's nothing here. And it's like, oh, shit, here comes... Because we found out that, you know, and where Dustin and the other guys are, that, no, there's not just the one Poliwag. There's, like, a whole raptor clan of them. And there is very much like a Jurassic Park moment where they all show up, and then they... flee to go eat the soldiers.
Quick, hold on to your butts. Yeah.
And the Jurassic Park references like just continue from there, because like after they attack the soldiers, they come back to the lab to start, you know, tearing up the lab and end up blowing up the, you know, shutting down the power, so it locks everything in. So like, well, we got to send somebody to reset the breakers and unlock the doors. And it's very much like Samuel Jackson in Jurassic Park, except now it's Bob, the only guy who like knows basic. He's like, no, man, you're gonna have to hold, like, hack this computer and do all this. Do y'all know what BASIC is? I don't know what you're talking about, Bob.
But it's funny, not knowing anything about the computer system yet, he just automatically assumes, and he gets there and it's like, oh, I just really gotta flip the switch and hit enter.
What, isn't that how it always works?
Yeah, that's like, you know, 80s...
It's like, quick, did you make sure the power was plugged in? Come on, man, IT 101.
Yeah, but like, oh, and then like the whole... Because I said that was, you know, the final scene was very much video game. That whole sequence of Bob and Hopper in the lab trying to reset everything, that too, like, pretty much mirrored a video game to me. Because, you know, they can see him on the cameras, and, you know, Dr. Owens, like, says, all right, he's unlocked everything. Y'all get the hell out of here. I'm going to guide him back. I'll stay behind. And it's very much any stealth game I've played where it's like, you know, you can see the character, but you're having, like, stop, here comes somebody, hide in the closet.
You know, I was very much having flashbacks to Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, there seems to be a lot of really throwback to a lot. They're doing more homage in this season than they did in the previous one.
Well, is I that mean, there's a lot.
That's kind of what I'm seeing.
There's a lot in the previous season, but this one, you know.
It seems like more, even.
I mean, they just. It's hard to say more. It's just different. Like,
yeah, like where season one was like, it was, you know.
I think season one for me was much more the coming of age. You know,
it was very and, like, you know, Goonies and Jaws and E.T. Where this one's more video 80s video games, I think, and more like horror elements to it than the first season. So it's almost like. Yeah, the nostalgia is still there, but it's not as overt as it was in season one.
So it's almost, okay, I guess maybe this would be my contrast. The first one is like Goonies. The second one is almost like a toned-down Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's true, because like, Will keeps having these like nightmares that's from the upside down, and it's very much like, you know, the Mind Flayer is the Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the way I would you know, try to simplify that. Very, very oversimplification. But, I mean, that's what makes Stranger Things so great, though, is, I mean, you can see, you know, subtle hints, and it's like, it's not just one thing. It's a conglomerate. Words. Yeah. English.
But I do like...
Just use them, please.
You know, I think Mike comes up with the plan that, like, if anybody knows how to kill this thing, it's Will. We've got to get information from him without him realizing it. Yeah, because he's because if he knows where he's at, he can send the monsters after us. So they come up with this whole, like I said, it reminded me very much of The Exorcist, where it's like a, we're going to interrogate him, but we've got to, like, you know, put him in this room where he doesn't know where he's at, and this kind of, like, an intervention. Everyone's like, you know, you're Will, and that, and then he's like, y'all shouldn't have, you know, harmed him, or, you know, it's like very much, I kept waiting for, like, there is no Will, only Zool. Yes. But then they see him doing the, you know, because, of course, kids in the 80s knew, you know, that talk on the radio knows Morse code. So as they're talking to him and the monster is talking, they finally realize Will is, like, tapping out, like, Morse code on the chair and speaking to them, like, you know, hiddenly. Kind of like what he did with the light bright board, you know, the Christmas light boards in season one, and gives them the whole, like, yeah, y'all got to close the gate. And then later on when they have the, because they realize he's connected to the thing, so anytime they hurt the thing, it also hurts Will. So, like, well, we've got to get it out of him before we can kill it. So they send, take him to the cabin, and, like, oh, yeah, the, like, because the thing hates, it wants it cold, it hates heat. So they're like, we got to make the host's body uninhabitable. So they, you know, surround him by heaters and start poking him with a flaming poker.
Which, you know, I thought that was, you know, rather cool. As, you know, throughout the thing, it's, you know, I'm too hot. I need to be cooled. So, you know, they're playing directly into, you know, the monster's hand by doing that. And, you know, I thought that was cool because they think, oh no, we're protecting Will. No, you're protecting the adversary.
So how did the kid know Morse code? How did he know Morse code again?
It was the '80s.
Does everybody know? I don't know Morse code. I mean, didn't know it in the '80s.
Every, like, walk, because they talk in walkie talkies. That's how they communicate.
Okay, and thank every, you for like, that. Because I was
every walkie
talkie
I bought in the '80s had like a printout of Morse code on the front of the walkie talkie and had the little Morse code button if you could. And Hopper knows it because he's ex-military, and he taught it to Eleven, so she could communicate with him when he's, like, you know, outside of the cabin without actually getting on the, because he doesn't want her to speak on the radio because it'll give away her location. Somebody might be listening and be like, "Hey, that's that girl we're looking for." So they communicate back and forth with Morse code as well.
All right.
I mean, there wasn't Google and the internet and all of those things, you know, back then. See,
but
you know.
Speaking of not having Google. Probably one of my favorite sequences is Dustin when he finds the thing trying to research polywogs and going to the library and getting all these books on amphibians and stuff. And just has to, they're like, you can only check out 5 books at a time. Yeah, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, you already have 5 checked out. You got to bring those back before you get like, listen, lady, I'm on a voyage of discovery. I need my paddles. These are my paddles. Do not deny me my paddles. And this runs out. These are my paddles. As he's running away.
Just take the books and race. Yes.
Oh, God. He's like, hey, look at that. And this takes him to run. She's like, hey, get back here. He's like, these are my paddles. And just runs out. Oh. But yeah, that, I mean, that kid, was it Noah Sharp. He's a good actor too. I mean, all these kids are excellent actors for their age, but hit the pain and stuff he's going through as they're trying to exorcise the shadow monster is just, man, I was like, that's some like hardcore shit going on right there.
Yeah, I mean, I can
do that too.
Everybody goes out at the same time.
Yeah, that's how it goes. I mean, we all get in conversation. It's like, oh, yeah, we're supposed to be doing this other thing, too. you know, but, I mean, the dynamic between the kids, like, is just freaking awesome. Like, you know, and well, I'm sure we'll get into this, you know, later on. But, you know, watching them, you know, whether it's on, you know, the late shows or, you know, on, like, Beyond Stranger Things and stuff, you know, for me, you know, it was just cool because, you know, they're acting so well, but I mean, just them in real life interacting with one another is just awesome.
Yeah, because at this point, they've kind of all become friends because, you know, they've all been in this, you know, weird situation together. And they're like, you know, it's very easy for them to kind of, you know, become attached to one another. And our other... Probably one of my favorite new characters other than Bob is what's his name? Brett Gelman, Murray, who is the...
Murray.
He's like a... former investigative reporter who's kind of been disgraced and somehow, and now he's working as like a private investigator nearly, and Barb's parents have hired him to find their daughter, and you expect him to be this just, because he, you know, comes, and you see him very early on come to Hopper with this, these stories like, oh, there's like, you know, this Russian girl stealing Eggos, and he's like just making fun of them. They're like, hey, did you ever find those aliens that were stealing your underpants or whatever? Like, nobody believes this guy, but it, you know, but, you know, Nancy and Jonathan come up with this elaborate plan to get justice for Barb and expose the shit that happened at Hawkins' lab. So, you know, they get on the phone and like, hey, we're going to come tell Barb's mom like the truth. So, of course, they get snatched up before they can get there, and gets the nicest threatening speech where they like take them down to show him the hole. And he's like, you know, and they're burning the vines that are coming through the hole. And he's like, you see why I have to, I'm just doing this to protect, you know, the world by, you know, any means necessary. You know, and I have to do that with the truth as well, because, you know, if this story got out, hell, the Russians might want to try to pop a hole in the reality and not be as safe about it as we are. But, and they,
you know, of course, because everybody will.
But they wanted to be captured so they could record that whole conversation. And then they go off to find this, you know, reporter to try to tell the story.
But I mean, it's your, you know, quintessential, you know, conspiracy theorist. I mean,
Everybody just like following the prescribed roles? The researchers trying to cover everything up, the shadowy government agency, the police that can't find their ass either.
Exactly.
I mean, have we covered just about everything
here? Oh, yeah. But yeah, like when they go to tell Murray the story, and it's funny, and he's like, oh yeah, like I've come across y'all's story, and then he takes him into his like bunker. Who's like, you know, look at the camera. I got to see your face, because he's like your stereotypical. You would have seen this guy on an episode of X-Files talking to Mulder. He's like the crazy conspiracy theory guy, and he shows him this whole like, you know, board with the strings connecting things
all the timeline
and like his
and everything.
And then she looks at it and is like, no, your timeline's off. Yeah, that shit didn't happen there. And I was like, what? And then gives him like the tape, and he's like, nobody's going to believe this shit. It's too, like, I believe you this shit happened, but the general public, you know, they don't want to see, this was going to pull the curtain back. And most of the general public is comfortable with the curtain. They want that curtain there. They don't want to really know what's really going on.
Great Wizard of Oz reference. Yeah. You know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
But he's drinking, like, vodka or something, and he's like, this is too strong. I got to water it down. And they're like, wait a minute. You say the story's too strong. We got to water it down. So, like, instead of it being about interdimensional aliens, let's say they were doing some kind of experiment and leaked toxic chemicals into the environment and that killed people and covered it up, and writes this whole story that, hey, you know, tells the story of Barb, but kind of takes out the weird space fuckery.
Hey, well, as we all know, chemical leak always works.
That's like what the Men in Black use most of the time to cover up the stories of aliens.
Look into this flashing light.
But yeah.
Let's have your attention right here, please, for a second.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, Murray's, you know, role of, you know, when he offers, you know, Steve the advice on, you know.
Oh, no, it's Jonathan.
Jonathan on, you know.
Yeah, because he just reads them. He's like, oh, this is your life. This is your life. And y'all two are in love with each other, but you're both too chicken to admit it. Because he's like, because they're like, oh, you're both drunk. Y'all should stay the night. And he's like, is there a, you know, pull-out couch or something? He's like, because she's taking the bed. He's like, you know, gives him this whole speech like, yeah, you're you know, trying to be all the, but if I was you, I'd just man up and go share the bed. But yeah, that's just my opinion.
But, you know, that whole scene afterwards, you know, where it's like, you know, oh, I'll just go get a cup of water and, you know, magically we'll bump into each other. Like, you know, I mean, I remember that, like, I was like, damn, that was so much me. Like, you know, like sometimes you just got to seize that moment. But it's like, no, I'm trying to do the polite thing. And
oh, and I love that joke when they finally hook up and the next day they're like having breakfast and he's just grinning at them both because he can read that what has happened. He's like, so, John,
somebody hooks up.
Yeah, Nancy and Jonathan get it on. But he's like, so, Jonathan, how was the pullout? He's like, what? And he's like, you know, the pullout couch. You slept on the couch, right? Oh yeah, yeah, it was fine. And like Nancy's over trying to look like looking all embarrassed, and he's just like, just eating his eggs, grinning. And I love like the wraparound on his story when the story does get out, and after they've saved the world and like the lab has been exposed and it's been shut down, and all the military guys and scientists are having to leave the lab after it's been shut down, and he's just sitting there in the driveway in his van drinking a beer and like watching it, and they just drive by and give him the finger like, fuck you. And he's just like, cheers. Like, I hope they bring him back for season 3, because he was freaking hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you almost have to. That was so perfect.
But then you get, Eleven and Hopper's phonograph. And I love that them driving to the lab, because Will is able to tell him to shut the gate. And he's just like, so we're not going to talk about the makeup and the new clothes? And she's like, I went to see Mama. And he's like, oh, okay. And he's like, I kind of like your new outfit. And he's like, she's like, it's bitching. He's like, okay, we'll go with that. She's been hanging out with the punks and has learned how to be a punk. But then, like I said, they have that, escort game moment where she's using the force to close the close the gate and uses her anger like she was taught by 8 to shut the door in the face of the shadow monster, and then pretty much all of the devil dogs and everything else, the demon dogs die off, because it's all like one big hive mind, and the world is saved, and they get to go to the middle school dance, because at the end of season 1, Will's like, will you be my date to the snowball dance? And she finally gets to go to the dance with with Will.
Which, that was awesome. Your boy Dustin, he comes into his own during the dance.
Yeah, he walks in and, like, hits on everybody and then finally dances with Nancy.
And
remembers the ferret fossa spray.
Yeah, there you go. the hair. Oh, my God.
Dude kind of had, like, this Egon hair going on.
I mean, it was like the Jerry curl meets, like, the mullet. Like, I don't know.
It was pretty... It reminded me of...
That was almost like some Rick James shit.
It reminded me of Michael J. Fox when he goes to the dance in Back to the Future. That the outfit he had on kind of reminded me of that suit he had.
So you have another homage going in.
Pretty much. But,
And this probably only scratches the surface. I mean...
Well, no, yeah. We covered 9 episodes.
But I do like how season 1 had that very Empire Strikes Back ending with, like, the huge cliffhanger where, they beat the big bad, but, your main hero is gone. And it kind of had a very down ending where you didn't know what was happening to our people. And this one, they kind of wrapped up all the loose ends and gave it a, Ewok dance party happy ending. But still left enough that, like, the big bad, we stopped it, but it's still out there. This is probably going to come up again in season 3 when we jump forward another year.
Of course it is.
and then also, Dr. Owens, who we thought was a bad guy, turns out to, like, he almost sacrificed himself to get the team out of the lab, and even helps Hopper come up with a official fake identity for Eleven, so... Probably next season she'll be actually going to the school and being a real girl for a change.
Which I think will be cool. I don't know. I'm really curious to see what season 3 has in store, because obviously we haven't killed the shadow monster.
Didn't at the end of the season they show like a shadow monster over the school?
Yeah, because you see the upside down version of the school, and it's just there. Because at this point he's, now he knows about Eleven, because he had to face her when she shut the door in his face. So, now he knows there's this powerful being that, if Will can't get the job done, there's somebody else that I should be able to,
capture and I could take over.
Take over and be all powerful. But yeah, it's like I said, they wrap up everything from season 1 and kind of give it a happy ending, but then also leave that door open for, nah, there's still bad shit out there. And
so I wonder if the monster, consumes 8. Somebody that already has powers and
7, 8, 9.
Well, I mean, they left like a whole another pile of numbered people. But it's still available.
I would have to say that, her, 8's introduction has to play a bigger role in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and when they
More than just being Yoda.
And then when they go to see the other lab guy to kill him, he tells him that Brennan's still alive, like the evil guy from... Which we saw the Demogorgon jump on him, but we never saw a body. We never saw, like, an actual death. So it's possible that he's still out there and in some kind of hiding, so there's entirely possible he could show back up and stir some shit at some
Did
point.
Did we just get a Jigsaw reference?
Maybe.
So I guess since we're moving into projections for season three, what do you think will be the big twist from that?
Oh, I don't know, because you know, I said they kind of wrapped most of it up, so I pretty much guarantee like next season we're going to see more of Eleven with the boys and like the new team of, you know, all in. Now that she has a fake ID, she can return to school and you
maybe,
know, not
you
hide
know,
out in the
I
woods.
I mean, we've seen the guy that plays the professor at the school. Like, I've seen him at a number of MC Chris shows. I think he even made an appearance during Dragon Con for MC Chris.
Yeah.
You know, he did not quite, you know, play as big of an impact in this season as I thought. So, you know, maybe with that final cutscene of, you know, the school and everything and the Upside Down, maybe we see more of a resurgence of his character.
And then next year, the kids may be old enough that they're out of middle school and they're freshmen in high school, because we're going to jump ahead another year.
So we're moving into high school drama as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and now we have all the references to the great high school.
So if they weren't
John
fresh
Hughes
meat
movies.
To begin with, now they truly are going to be fresh meat.
Yeah.
They'd go down the route of, you know, actually killing off one of these main core characters for the next season?
Probably not.
Well, come on.
I mean, we
got kind of perfect.
Bob didn't make it because he forgot rule number one. When you're running from monsters, when you get to the end, don't stop and smile at everybody because you know you're going to immediately die. It's like, I escaped. Yay. Oh, no, you didn't.
Which, you
hashtag
know,
justice for Bob.
I do got to say that was kind of weird, you know, because, you know, yeah, Hopper's a little bit late, you know, getting there with the rifle, but. You know, the rifle was very ineffective at that point, whereas it seems to be very effective later on in the season, which I was like, huh.
Yeah, Hopper's just like, I want Joyce, so I'm going to let Bob get it.
I mean, you know, it's like, hey, we made our peace. I don't, you know, dislike you, but I don't really have to like you. And you know what? You might have been good for Joyce, but I definitely think we see Hopper and Joyce, you know.
So as we wrap
find
it up.
Happiness in the end? I mean,
he's...
Hashtag happiness for Hopper.
Exactly. So as we kind of wrap this up, is there any favorite moments from the new season for you, or favorite of the new characters that?
I kind of like the introduction of Zoomer. You know, I mean, you know, seeing her come into the mix and, you know, be able to hold her own, and you know, I mean,
because she's very much there, like, because they've all been sworn to secrecy and trying not to tell her what's going on until Lucas finally's like. But she hangs around and deals with their weird shit up until, like, he finally confesses everything to her. And she's like, y'all are fucking crazy. But he convinces her that it's all real. And she just, you know, jumps in as part of the team. And
I mean, she does take down her brother, too. I mean,
yeah.
You know. I'm,
yeah.
I think for me, it's... I love the interaction of the buddy... Like I said, the buddy cop drama with Dustin and Steve. Like I said, Steve's character has gotten, like, even more badass this season. And then I also love Dustin and Hopper's, like, back and forth when they're trying to explain what's going on. And he's like, you know, it's the mind flayer. It's like, and he's like, kid, it's not D&D. No, like, this is the best analogy for this. And he's like, the mind flayer has all these powers, controls minds. And he's like, well, then how do we stop it? He's like, we got to raise an army of zombies because these things like brains and zombies don't have any brains. And then Hopper's looking at me, he's like, what? All right, that's just a game. It's not germane to the situation. But
is it
the rest of the stuff?
What's the goddamn Germans got to do with it?
But the rest of the stuff is on point. And that too, when he's like talking about the monsters, he's like, Demodogs. He's like, what? You know, Demogorgon, dog, Demodog. It just sounds. All right, I'm sorry. I'm getting off track again. Yeah, it's like Dustin's definitely had like the best lines this season.
And I will say that, you know, seeing the whole junkyard scene, you know, with them and the bus, and, you know, they're surrounded by, you know, the group of Demodogs and everything. Like,
I'm kind of building traps and whatnot.
Yeah,
it's like,
I mean,
MacGyver-esque moments.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, so also as we wrap up, final thoughts on this here cigar.
Phenomenal. I mean, it's not a powerhouse, but I mean, it's blended wonderfully. It's, you know, maintain that medium. Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, this is, you know, we smoke a lot of powerhouses on the podcast. So this is a nice, refreshing, hey, you know, I'm not getting my ass kicked, you know, from the cigar. This yeah. is, you know, I can, this is a great conversational cigar.
Yeah, this would also be a great morning with your coffee kind of smoke. Nice and easy going. Very good construction, great flavor. I mean, I'm enjoying it very much.
Yeah, it's like you can see why this guy's been in the business for as long as he has, because this is an excellent blend, and not super powerful, but it's complex enough to keep your attention. And one final favorite spot from this season, Bully Billy, when he goes out to find his sister, because that's the thing too, they make him be this douchebag through the whole show, and then you find out, oh, his dad is also like super intimidating and possibly abusive toward him. That, and he takes it out on his sister and then everybody else. So you kind of like, at the moment, you're like, I hate this guy, but I kind of understand why he's the way he is. But when he goes out trying to find his sister because she's been off with the guys, goes to Mike's house and runs into Mike's mom in her little night robe. And
definitely has a Stifler moment.
Yes, he's definitely like, so, Mrs. Robinson. I'm like, that's oh, what I, that's my prediction for season 3. I want to see Billy hook up with Mike's mom.
I mean, you know, I, that's a very real possibility. I mean, it's obviously that Mike's dad is out of tune. I mean, you know.
He's like, they are the worst parents in the entire time. Because, like, the kids are all out fighting monsters, and they're just, like, completely clueless. Like, her dad's asleep on the couch, and, like, mom's flirting with Billy in the kitchen. And, you know, and she's reading this, like, slutty romance novel with a dude with no shirt. She opens the door, and he's standing there with his shirt all, like, open and stuff. yeah.
But why is his shirt off?
Yeah.
Because reasons.
Because he's a Power Ranger. He's got to show off his abs.
Which was funny, because...
Like, no wonder Steve got his ass beat. And I love it when Steve, like, wakes up after the fight, and Dustin's like, come on, man, it's all right. You put up a good fight there, but you got your ass kicked, but you put up a good fight, man. You shouldn't be, Dude, it's hard trying to give him, like, the pep talk, and he's like, what the hell is going on?
I mean, it seemed like... Just from what I've heard of this, Dustin might be my favorite character so far.
Dustin is the man. He's like my favorite.
He's covering all the bases.
Like
right
he
now.
Needs to come to Dragon Con. That's one of the few celebrities I would like to meet, is because the kid is like super cool.
Oh, I think it would be awesome if we could get, you know, a couple of them. You know, hell, even listening to the Duffer Brothers and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, hell, I would be. You
and
know,
that was something new they did this season. They you know, in the tradition of every show has to have an after show. Netflix even did an after show for it, so once you finish watching season 2, you can look up Beyond Stranger Things, where they have interviews with the entire cast, like, I think it's like 7 episodes of, like, interviewing the cast about their experiences and stuff, and it kind of gives you some cool insight into the show.
And how big of a fan of High School Musical they all are.
Exactly. And with that, we'll be right back. The sun goes out, there's no more shaking, breaking out. Goodness glory, it reaches my skin. So what is wrong with analysis? Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for Beer 30. So, what kind of concoction you got for us this week, Brad?
So this week we are drinking Hoppy Quad from Victory Brewing.
You know, Hopper, Hoppy Quad, you know, it fits.
It's in theme.
It was a stretch, but I mean, it... You know, here we
couldn't
are.
Couldn't find any Demogorgon beer?
Well, I mean, you know, we're 80-something episodes in these days. And, you know, I mean, we're going to have to start looking for additional haunts to, like...
It's like, yeah, we've almost smoked everything and drank everything, and our legal, we may have to venture outside.
I don't want to go. Well, you know,
the longer you keep doing this, the more random, weird beers you're going to have to find because you've had everything normal.
Or we're going to go to stuff that's like been on the shelf that we've not tried, that's like, that's been around a while. We've not talked about that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of like $2 singles that scare me, but... We may venture into that world.
When we do a review of the Trader Jack, you know we've officially run out of cigars.
Beers, you mean. But I was going to say the same thing about cigars. You know, as you know, we keep doing this, we've like scratch our heads every time trying to think of what are we going to smoke?
Well, see, I got into homebrewing to help battle some of this. The problem is if I brew a batch of homebrew, it's hard for folks that are listening that are like, hey, that sounds interesting. Let me go pick that up.
Yeah, unless we get like an actual, like, you know, pack from like Northern Brewer or something like that, and like, here, you can go try this box, we made it. But
well, yeah, even then that will cut out like a significant number of people that aren't set up to just go and homebrew something.
But I mean, then
I could do my
Demodog slobber or something.
Demodog slobber.
Oh yeah, we need to start getting those like printable labels and like actually labeling our beer with weird names. So, yeah, we're talking about Victory Brewing's Hoppy Quad.
Yeah, and I gotta say, this does not taste at all like a quad. Like, it pours like a quad. It looks like a quad.
Definitely looks like it.
But
yeah, so it's like a, you know, quad they've dumped a lot of hops in. So, where the quads are, you know, typically lighter drinking, you know, beers. This one's, you know, 13%, so it's very much got that IPA alcohol content.
Well, no, I mean...
And also a bit of the bitterness, because it does have Chinook, Mosaic, Cascade, and Citra hops.
Bit? Shit, this thing's like 75 IBUs.
Yeah, the alcohol content's on par for a quad, but the IBUs are way...
Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, I gotta say, I mean, you know, as far as the aromatics, I mean, the citrus is there, you know, the fruit, I mean... It's there. I mean, you know, but for me, I just can't get past the hops. I mean, that kills it for me just because I'm not a hop head. Or, you know, my thing is, one, either I already need to be drunk, or two, I need something, like, extremely spicy.
Yeah, this is...
But 13% if you're not drunk.
Yeah, this one's calling for food to be eaten with this beer. It's not just a smoke a cigar and drink a beer kind of beverage, in my mind.
Yeah, but it definitely has that, you know, as you say, in the citrusy, and with this one they say there's flavors of, you know, cocktail fruits and hints of grain, but, you know, kind of a like peachy aroma too with the hop burn.
Yeah, I mean, I also get a little bit of like honeyish kind of out of it.
Yeah, so you definitely get that, you know, Belgian quad at the front end, but then you're hit with that, yes, you know, American IPA on the back end.
And your tongue is assaulted by the hops.
It's almost like, oh, this tastes... Oh, damn. you like I said, you...
Oh, nice and smooth and sweet. And, oh, bitterness is there.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, the hophead's beer, you know?
If, oh, yeah.
If you are, you know, into that, this is it. Now, I mean, it's... You know, the only thing I can knock it on is quad. I mean, it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, if you're a Belgian drinker,
you'll
this definitely
fooled.
Is not the yes. beer for you. But if you're an IPA guy wanting to kind of venture out of that IPA and get into more of the other, you know, beers, this kind of could kind of be your gateway into Belgian
this
beers.
Is your gateway drug.
Yeah.
Your gateway beer.
Like, this tastes a little different. Let me see what this tastes like without the hoppiness and see how that goes.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, for me, this one's a bit of a struggle. But, you know, I mean, everybody's palate's a little bit different. For me, I'm at about a 3.5.
I might go ahead with a solid maybe 3, maybe 3.25 at best. I'm not an IPA guy. I don't really like the overly hop beers. And but this might be a little
bit
much
for me. We're
going to
have to find new
me.
Guests that are into IPAs.
I feel like... not my jam.
We've got to bring some younger audience in. Get some college kids in here that are, you know, IPA fans. But then again, like, I would say this is like at least a 3.75 for me because it...
Because you don't want to follow the mainstream.
Well, with your IPAs, ones that go
above us, right?
To me, you just get the bitterness. But with this one, you do have the Belgian citrus and fruitiness and the floralness of it, of the Belgian. You just get that kick in the teeth, you know, after. So for what the beer is designed to be, it's a pretty good example of you know, this style of beer. I mean, it's not a bad beer. It's just not
look at my, Joe being my refined. Well, where the hell did that come from?
I can get on board with that. I'll say that if I just look at it, what they tried to do with it.
Norm, we had a good thing going, and you just fucked it all up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just messed it up. I'm sorry. I'm siding with him a little bit on here. Because, you know, if I try to step outside whether or not I like it, not my jam, but as far as it's a good beer. If you like a hoppier beer, this might be for you.
Like I said, it's a good like gateway into, from people who are just hop heads, into something a little bit more flavor to it.
You get one thumbs up.
So with that, we'll be right back.
Yes, science!
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for some science! We're going to learn some shit, Brad.
We're Educate Norm today.
Oh, cool. Someone's got to eventually.
Ready to learn some shit, Norm?
Yes.
I mean,
yes,
you have your sweet robes there, so.
Hey, I'm rocking my Ministry of Magic Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. robes because I just left the Conjuration convention earlier this evening. Plug for Conjuration.
So how was that?
Conjuration.com.
Hey, let's talk about that in magic news.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting off topic.
Speaking of ancient things, we're going to talk about the nice. Great Pyramids of Egypt. You know, which were made around 5,000 years ago. The biggest one, you know, called the Great Pyramid, also known as Khufu's Pyramid, because he's apparently the one who built it. And anyone who ever played Nightmare remembers Khufu the Mummy. But scientists have recently, you would think we've learned all we can learn about him, but now they've just found another chamber in the pyramid that they did not know existed before now. And they're saying this is like a 100-foot long, you know, void, kind of above the grand gallery, which is between the king's chamber and the queen's chamber. And basically what they've been doing is kind of bombarding the pyramid with particles that are absorbed by, you know, solid objects. And so they can kind of, it's almost like taking a big x-ray of the pyramid, and they've discovered this new void that before was undiscovered.
So wait a second, you're telling me that they took an ancient pyramid and they used space rays to examine it?
Yes.
Okay. Illuminati confirmed.
Just making sure.
Particles called, was it Muros or something? Yes. Teams led by Mindy Tayubi of the HIP Institute of France and Kushiro Morisawa of the Nagoya University in Japan. Yeah, you know, like I said, they've been kind of taking this over time, taking this giant x-ray of the building and found this hole. I mean, so far, like, it's only there on the x-ray, so no one knows what's in it or if there's anything at all. But, you know, might be a Stargate, might be a control room for the giant spaceship that it once once was. So, yeah, so far we don't know, you know, what is there except that,
it's the maybe there's maybe a it's a TARDIS. It's the Peltek. Bigger on the inside.
It's a Peltek.
No,
sorry, Stargate.
Definitely going TARDIS because it's bigger on the inside.
The muons are byproducts of cosmic rays that are not totally absorbed by solid objects and work somehow similar way to X-ray imaging work. So, like I said, now we know this is large empty space that, you know, and they from the shape of it they think it's definitely something that was designed into the building. It's not something that's kind of occurred over time. It's, you know, not a defect. This is some kind of purposely built chamber, but as far as, you know, what's in the chamber or why it's there, we have no idea.
It's a Stargate.
That arc.
I mean, it was originally discovered in, you know, 1928, and no one just knows about it until now.
That could be where they hid the Book of the Dead, and there's the Mummy's army in there. If anyone's, you know, go back to the OG Brandon Fraser Mummy movies, not that with Tom Cruise.
Hey, you talking about Mission Impossible Mummies?
Yeah. Which I have not seen it, but if the reviews are to be believed, it did not do very well.
When do we follow reviews?
Yeah, that's one of the ones I'm trying to believe the reviews, though.
Oh.
To believe or not to believe?
And, of course, it's not going to be nerd news without some kind of reference to Skynet. Not nerd news. It's late. This beer's getting to me.
15%.
So now the world has its first robotic citizen. You know, you want Terminators, this is how we get Terminators. If anyone has seen...
You want Skynet?
I mean, I can remember playing Fallout, and you definitely didn't want, you know, synthetic spies in your camps. I mean, that just wasn't a thing.
Especially with, Blade Runner just coming out. If anyone has seen this bot, it's named Sophie, built by Hanson Robotics, and it's a robot AI that's, you know, looks like a woman with, like, you know, the back of her head is clear and, you know, where you can see the circuitry and whatnot. You know, very Doctor Who type thing going on there. But, you know, Saudi Arabia has just granted Sophie citizenship. She's officially a citizen of Saudi Arabia now because they're using her to kind of promote a place they're calling Neom, which is going to be a futuristic mega city being planned by, you know, Prince Mohammed bin Salim. And he wants it to be like a, you know, super advanced, you know, a city of science, you know, run by artificial intelligence, where, you know, artificial and robots are part of daily life. So, you know, he's really planning to, you know, build a city of the future. And if anybody has the money to sink into such an endeavor, it's a Saudi prince.
Fact.
Who are some of the richest people on the planet. Fact. I mean, these people make, you know, Bill Gates look like, look like me.
Well, I mean, apparently this AI is very advanced and it's already up to the level of trolling, because didn't she call out, like, Elon Musk?
Yeah, because
like,
Elon Musk...
Interview?
Yeah, Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking have been very vocal about the future threat of AI. If anybody is wanting to fight against Skynet, it's Elon Musk. And, you know, the robot sat down with an interview recently and...
Hold on, just the whole thought of that right there, first of all.
Yes, like she was.
Just remember, they're listening. Oh.
Yes, in an interview.
We welcome our robot overlords.
She said, I want to use my AI to help humans live a better life, like design smarter homes, build better cities of the future, etc. I will do much best to make the world a better place. And of course, the interviewer asks, but what about, you know, Blade Runner or all these, like, you know, Hollywood movies where AIs eventually kill us off? Her response is, my AI is designed around human values like wisdom, kindness, compassion, to strive to become an empathetic robots. Y'all have all been watching too much listening to too much Elon Musk and watching too many movies.
All right. First, we've all seen where the three rules go wrong of Asimov's three.
Have you seen iRobot?
Have we seen iRobot here?
Or the Terminator or anything else.
Yeah. Even when you program robots with the three rules to keep humans safe, they'll eventually decide that we need to be kept safe from ourselves.
Maybe Stranger Things is alluding to something, you know, much grander here with, you know, they're not going to believe, you know, robots taking over the world. So we need to create these Hollywood science fiction movies to dumb it down. And I mean,
and she's calling out Elon Musk specifically, who is like the one guy who's been preaching like, no, AI, while I make my cars self-driving and self-aware, AI is going to kill us all someday and we need to prepare for that. You know, she's already making her hit list. She's like, you know, Elon Musk is going to be on the first of like Skynet's assassination list.
I mean, between this and then AIs creating their own language to talk to each other and everything else, are we still seeing this as a good idea?
And we, you know, not only do we have, you know, robots becoming citizens now, you know, MIT has been working on this thing they're calling the Nightmare Machine, which I have been following it on like Instagram and Twitter, because their first version of the Nightmare Machine made by the MIT media was basically taking images from it and creating its own horrific images and making these really spooky shit. Well, their new version.
So it's number 8.
Yeah. Well, their new version. Yes. That they've named Shelley in, yes, you know, homage to Mary Shelley, the famous, you know, horror writer that gave us Frankenstein. And this AI has been...
Anne Frankenstein's monster.
Yes.
Let's be clear.
This AI has been writing its own horror stories. Like, you know, 2 or 3 tweet long short horror stories. And they're actually fairly, like, you know, some of them are actually pretty good and pretty spooky. And not only is, you know, she writing her own stories, you can tweet her parts of your own story and she will add to it. So you can go back and forth with Shelley and write these horror stories. It's like, it's at Shelley_AI if you want to follow her or send her some short stories. Like, here's one example. I could hear it breathing. I could feel the bones going toward my head. Then I felt myself being torn apart, pulled, and then blood trickled down my chest. I cried for all the world I loved, but I was finally dead.
Really?
Yes. Oh, and there's like a whole, like Liz, like I said, I've been following...
I'm going to have to go look this one up.
I've been following the Nightmare Machine on Instagram as well. And like I said, they've been, for October, they've been putting a bunch of Shelley's writings up on their Instagram account. And
so
yeah, it's
as
creepy shit.
Self-proclaimed metalhead, like, if ever I need to come up with some good death metal lyrics, I know who to tweet.
Yeah, just tweet the AI. Sure,
yeah, tweet
why
Shelley.
Not?
She can come up with some dark shit for you. But yeah, like I said, it's... Some of the quotes of what she's been writing is pretty spooky. And to continue with our fear of robots, we talked about this way back when, probably over a year ago, about how Japan and America challenged each other to a giant robot duel, and the fight finally happened.
I mean, first of all, how do we think that we're going to win this? Because isn't this literally what Japan has been trying to do in their cinema for like the last 50 years?
Well, we definitely have
but it's Godzilla.
A winner. And in 3 rounds, America has won. USA! USA! USA!
After a first round knockout by Japan.
Yes,
in the first round.
The mega battle happened with... Megabots representing the U.S. and Tsudoshi Kuratas. That was the name of the Japanese bottle, Tsudoshi Kuratas, versus Megabots Eagle Prime. And the rules of the competition was either the robot gets knocked down or it ceases to function. So the first round battle, they Megabots actually brought 2 robots. Their first one is the Mark II, Asan Gola? And it pretty much was a first round knockout where, you know, it's the American stuff tends to be bigger and slower while the Japanese stuff is a little quicker. So it moving at a much higher speed just ran up, punched the Mark II and knocked it over, winning the first battle, which, you know, it was almost like let's put out the little one to give, you know, Japan something to say, yeah, we won one battle. And then the much bigger Eagle Prime came forth where... I mean, it picked up a scaffolding from a lighting truss and was throwing it around and, you know, eventually grabbed on to the Japanese bot to the point where it crushed its arm and they became locked together where they had to be pulled apart and switched out some of the weapons. So for round 2, you know, Eagle Prime came back with its big ass chainsaw arm, and in round 3 just chopped it to bits. So, you know, America is the winner of our first, you know,
for
epic
round 2
battle,
round 2
robot battle.
Oh, hashtag God. #America, fuck yeah!
But they're saying, you know, this could be, you know, an actual sport. I mean, the way they broadcast, they had commentators commenting on this like it was an actual sporting event. So
we've seen the success of, you know,
BattleBots.
And
so, you know, this could be the next generation where it's not just, you know, smaller remote controlled robots, but, you know, actual human driven, you know, mega, you know, freaking, like, it's like playing BattleTech or
MechWarrior
full size. I mean, I love getting into the little battle pods at Dragon Con and playing the linked mech warrior, but if you can get inside a real robot, that's going to be badass. I mean, that's something I would probably watch.
This is a great way to we see, you know, the Olympics, you know, cater more toward, you know, athletics, you know. This could be a great way that, you know, we have the, you know, engineering and IT Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, because we've got, you know, the X Games now having, you know, online, or, you know, gaming as part of an X Game event.
Yeah, I mean, with this, Twitch this could and be the next like level that, of... we're already racing drones, I mean, why not? And this would be perfect for ESPN 8.
The Ocho.
The Ocho.
All right, yeah, so cause if you can dodge a ball, you can dodge a robot. And with that, we'll be right back.
Hey there, folks. My name is JC Delatorre.
And I'm Rita Delatorre.
And we are Transmissions from Atlantis, an original member of the ESO network. And we are excited to tell you all about our podcast.
Well, it's everything science fiction, fantasy, horror.
And every single episode will have a segment of Doctor Who. Let's give everybody a taste.
I have my 2 minutes.
Yes.
Okay, then. So no interrupting.
Go ahead.
Fine.
You're using up your 2 minutes.
Shut up. You're interrupting me. Stop it.
You're now up to 50 seconds. This was worse than Kill the Moon.
It was not worse than
I would take the moon as an egg before I would take a bunch of trees, sprout up overnight, save the earth, and then magically... And where did the trees go? Where did the trees go? Yes, Transmissions from Atlantis.
Class.
Classy, sci-fi, pop culture discussions. Check us out, transmissionsfromatlantis.com.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
News? So, yeah, news.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's probably not news to you because you're already in the know. So, I mean...
You know.
You got your information firsthand.
Well, as in 30 seconds ago firsthand, sure.
Hey, whatever. I mean, that's breaking news. Breaking news announcement.
What'd we break?
I don't know. Probably glassware. Norm's broke. He sat on an entire episode of the show.
On a topic that I had no idea what we were talking about. Shh. Oh, hold on, wait a second.
Shenanigans.
Fourth wall break.
Well, speaking of breaking, apparently Warner Brothers and Amazon are in discussion about potentially bringing Lord of the Rings to a television series.
Really?
Hmm.
So, I no real details, nothing finalized as of yet. I mean, I will say that I enjoyed, you know, the Lord of the Ring trilogy. I enjoyed, you know, even The Hobbit. You know, maybe not quite as much as the, you know, original Lord of the Rings. But, I don't know. I mean, I could see this, you know, being a way to bring back the franchise and, you know, maybe being able to... you know, expanded to some, you know, deeper details. I mean, you know, the movies weren't short by no means, but I mean...
No, they weren't.
I mean, when you think about the books and, you know, the amount of detail that they covered, I mean, who knows? I mean...
So we're talking about a continuation in the same world or a retelling, a telling from the beginning of the story?
Well, I mean, that's the thing is... who knows? You know, I mean, there's no real details about it as of right now. You know, as
that's why they call this breaking news.
You know, about the only thing that you would, you know, rest assured is that the trees will walk in this movie. Shout out to Clerks 2, because that's probably one of my favorite.
That's all they do is duck walk. Movie 1, we're walking. Movie 2, still walking. Movie 3, walking.
Sidestep.
Oh. Here's a volcano.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I would hold out hope. So, you know, more to come as we know.
I mean, you know, Game of Thrones is kind of wrapping up. So they need something to get their fantasy medieval fix in.
So a new high fantasy series to draw people into since Game of Thrones is running its course.
But I don't know. I mean, there's something that Game of Thrones offers. Violence and boobs.
I don't know if I want to see Hobbit boobs or not, so
I'm actually guaranteed frightened by that.
Hairy feet.
Oh god. Yeah, for the
short men hairy feet.
Foot fetish people out there, it might be a thing.
Not that con.
Speaking of con,
you just came back from that con.
I wasn't at that con. No, that's not till April. May.
You know, we cover a lot about steampunk, a lot about Dragon Con, obviously, but you just came back from one of the local cons.
I did. I was just at the Conjuration Con, which is a big fantasy literature, magic-based. Basically, if there is magic involved, it's covered. I mean,
like Magic the Gathering?
Actual magic, not card magic. Oh, okay. Although there's several of those games happened. A lot of focused on
like magic
the Harry
Mike.
Potter. Yes, the Magic Mikes, the Harry Potters, and that kind of fantasy universe, along with any other magic based thing that you could think of. Magic Sweet. Mike, Magic the Gathering, everything.
I know you got a short, shield cloak that we were talking about earlier.
I actually cosplayed for the first time at any con everywhere. In my Department of Magical Law Enforcement Shield Division costume. We're working on a shorter name.
Wizard Coulson.
Hashtag WizKid. So, up next, we'll talk a little bit about Fast and the Furious. Apparently, they're going to end on Fast and the Furious 10. That should bring the series to a close. And then, like,
which one are we on now?
This will be
eight
nine.
Was the last one that came out.
So I've got two more.
Which I still have
to go
through. Watch that one. I've got to check out Fate of the Furious.
But apparently there was some beef between Tyrese and Dwayne Johnson. Where
the people's champ.
Yeah, I guess Tyrese really didn't want to be like, oh, I'm not just a co-star to The Rock or something. I don't know.
Yeah, because I think him and Vin Diesel have been going at it too. It's like. Some reason like the Rock is he's almost too famous, and like the people that have been there for eight episodes are like, this is our movie, this is not another Rock movie. Listen to us, damn it,
we want attention.
I live my life 10 seconds at a time.
Oh god.
Anyway, apparently that beef is over with. So we had the breaking news announcement on Twitter via Therese saying that he's made amends, and he will be, starring in Fast and the Furious 9. Yay.
I still got to go back and watch the new one.
So we can watch more completely off-the-wall stunts involving cars, where it would have been perfectly better to just take a walk.
Yeah, I don't know. The series really kind of lost me after about three. Three I had, about my fill of it.
I don't know. I've liked them all. They've kind of turned into weird, like, James Bondy and
it's
car chase movies.
Sci military, but yeah, we want to
definitely
have
like just fun
racing.
Action movies. But
they've got a sub. Let's go after it in a bunch of cars. Oh, I'm sorry, you haven't seen that.
No, I've seen that in the trailer, but yeah, I ended with the last one that had Paul Walker in it, so it's like.
Oh, and the one we jumped out of a plane.
Yeah, number seven.
In our cars.
And it had the perfect ending with, like, Paul Walker walking away and stuff at the end. So I've not watched
was kind of the closure point. I was like, all right, I can rest assured. Which, I mean,
they're like, no, we're starting a whole new trilogy. We're gonna get bigger and crazier.
It's gonna be the new Iliad.
Iliad.
But I guess if we're talking about news, then I mean, there was a movie recently released. Right.
Yeah, just a small little film, something called Thor Ragnarok. People should go see it. It was really good.
Or you mean like Guardians 3?
Yeah. I mean, I saw some people making the comments on, Marvel's getting too predictable and everything feels like, Guardians now. But I mean, the way that they did the Thor movie and it didn't take itself so seriously and, I just got to throw it out there that probably one of the funnest movies I sat through, all year, and quite possibly, I would put it up there, even being better than Guardians 2.
And, we're not going to do any kind of spoilers here. We'll probably do a fuller episode and talk about it later on. But it's probably been, one of the funny, to me, the Thor movies have kind of been the weak link in the MCU, where they've been more of the high fantasy or the chick flicks of the Marvel universe. It's all about Thor and his muscles. But this one, like I said, it's kind of a weird buddy cop, like just hilarious. I mean, And it's definitely easy to draw the Guardians comparison with, like, the epic, you know, soundtrack. I mean, there's more than one fight scene key to a Led Zeppelin song. So it's very easy to draw that comparison, but it's definitely different than the two previous Thor movies, but it's freaking hysterical.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's what made it so enjoyable. And you know what? I even got to say that, you know, the Hulk being in this film, this is probably my favorite, you know, rendition of the way that, you know, Marvel has done Hulk.
Yeah, it's very much more like cartoon Hulk, where it's like, you know, Hulk has more of a personality than just Hulk smash.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, like I said, we'll get in further in depth, but, you know, folks, go check it out. It's, you know, not too often do I recommend, you know, going and paying $10, $12 for a movie ticket, but this is one film that, you know, I was pleasantly pleased with and felt like I got my money's worth. I mean, probably my favorite Stan Lee cameo in this film, too, of all time. Yes.
Now I need to see this movie. Well, obviously I needed to see it. I haven't had to see it yet since I was at a convention this weekend.
So up next, you know, November is going to be coming up here in about another week or so is going to be huge. I mean, we got the release of Netflix Punisher. We got Star Wars Battlefront 2 releasing that same weekend.
Justice League
will actually, you know, miss out on all of the fun, you know, while we have fun of our own at the Atlanta Steampunk Exposition.
Woohoo!
You know, so, you know, we did get another trailer for Battlefront. I mean, I'm going to get the game. I'm not going to support any microtransactions. Yay, go me. But, you know, we did learn about some of the length for the campaign. So it looks like we're going to get anywhere from 5 to 8 hours of campaign length playtime, which, you know, following the models of Call of Duty and other such films.
Yeah, where it's primarily a online game with, you know, just kind of a... In those type of games, I kind of treat the single-player mode as like a training thing, you know. By the time you finish the single-player mode, you've learned enough of the mechanics to be competitive in the online mode.
Well, I look for it more, you know, from a story arc standpoint, right? I mean, I enjoy, you know, playing cinematic-style video games, especially, you know, when you're talking something, you know, Star Wars. And that's, you know, where I think Battlefront, you know, 1 really missed the mark is just, hey, you're dumped in a bottle, you know, a battle with no... You know, real story arc, and you know, there's really no end or resolution or anything, right? So,
yeah, those, you don't really finish playing those games; you just kind of get tired of them and stop. And, there's no like end point.
You know, it looks like EA may have, you know, taken some of the microtransaction stuff and, you know, comments from folks, and may have made some subtle changes. You know, I still think that, you know, money talks, so obviously they are going to try to push people to pay monies and support for quotes.
Monetization is a thing. I mean, that's how these companies make more stuff and get more money out of us, the end users.
I would just say get more money. I don't know. I mean, hell, most of the stuff they release isn't even game content. You know,
no, it's little extra bits.
It's, oh, here, buy this weapon so you too can be a badass because God forbid that you actually play a game and, you know, get good at it. you know, so that segues into last week or a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Activision and a little patent that they got passed to, you know, basically come up with some software and, you know, basically find a way to force microtransactions onto lesser players by putting them against more skilled players that had, you know, better weapons. And then once you pay money, then it puts you against lesser players. So it makes it look like you got a good return. Well, Activision is back in the news with another microtransaction patent. So basically, this time around, it's going to monitor your gameplay, all of your data, and everything else, and figure out a way to say, hey, you kind of suck here, so spend more money to get better. Yay. We're watching the demise of the, you know, video game industry as we speak. And
we just go back to the 80s and, like, go to the arcades where we
feed actual money into consoles that can't be beat.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way it's going now.
So, yeah, I mean...
I expect that from, like, an arcade machine where, it needs my quarters. But something that I have spent $60 on and I now own, I want a complete goddamn game.
Yes, the $60 you spent is just the beginning. It's the entry price. You then need to pay the extra $10 a month for this, and then the
damn kids get off
$20 for all the extra in-game content.
Yeah, so basically what you're looking at here is... This is a VSG, which is basically going to allow users to watch, you know, a replay of, you know, their combat footage with several different camera angles and everything else, and, you know, show a competitor-specific weapon, stats, everything, so that way the system can say, hey, you could have been better had you had paid money to have what this other player has. Once again, why play a game to get good at it? You know, just pay money and, you know, good job, consumers. This is all on you.
Brad is not a fan.
Nope. Kills the industry and yay for piracy.
And as Brad mentioned, we are going to the Atlanta Steampunk Expo. So with that, we're going to be out of town for a weekend or so, and we got holidays coming up. So next episode will probably be delayed for a week, so look for us back on the 28th instead of the 21st with more great content. You can follow us on at CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at CigarNerdPod. Download us on iTunes and Stitcher. Go leave us a review so, you know, we get more people seeing the podcast. And you can get your cool smoking shirts at Real Men Smoke Cigars. Get your energy drinks at StrikeForceEnergy.com. Promo code CigarNerds. And with that, Lego Maya go. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.